Hey, so I'm Amy. I'm the host of the Woman in Comedy podcast, and I get to chat with amazing women in the industry, behind the scenes, up on the stage, all about their journey, and a little bit about me. So I work as a programmer for the Woman in Comedy Festival here in Manchester. I also work as a progression booker and look after Beat the Frog for the Frog and Bucket, and work as an artist liaison. Is pretty much me, and I've worked in comedy since 2013. And I started this podcast because I just wanted to talk to amazing women, really, and just have a platform for us to chat and just be ourselves and talk about what it is to be in this amazing, magical, sometimes hard industry. So sit back, grab a brew and a Becky, and enjoy the podcast. Today I'm chatting with Jules O'Brien, and we spoke last year when she did her first 20 at the Frog and Bucket, which was really exciting because I'd seen her journey from Beat the Frog up into the weekend. So as I say, grab a brew, grab some biscuits, and enjoy my chat with Jules.
But how was your gig? You just performed.
That was really nice. Yeah, first weekend at the Frog. That was really, really nice. Yeah. Well, I feel like it was really nice. I hope you're not sitting there thinking you just died on your ass.
I mean, I haven't watched it yet. I didn't want to watch it. I just was like, oh, I'm going to just trust
it
you
was
to
really,
do things.
It was really lovely, actually. Nice. I had a really, really nice time. And I felt very relaxed. And,
good.
Yeah, it was cool. And they were doing that thing that, they were laughing at things, and I was thinking, I'm not sure why you're laughing at this point, but you know what? Let's just go with it anyway.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, I'll just take that as a bonus.
Oh, so that,
but it was really lovely. And I talked about all the things that I wanted to talk about and felt comfortable enough to throw bits in that I've only tried a couple of times before, which is might not be particularly sensible when it's your first time doing the weekend at the Frog, but it just felt, you know, when you're in the moment sometimes and you just think, do you know what? It feels okay. I feel really comfy to do this. So, so I did.
I think also too, when you do it in like the middle,
that's
when you can get a little bit get away with it.
Yeah, exactly. It is like the cozy middle. It does feel like you're cheating a little bit sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, no, I meant the middle of your set.
Oh, in the middle of my set. Oh, I thought you meant literally the middle.
Sorry, I should have made that clear. No, I meant like.
Oh, in the middle. Yeah, absolutely.
Like once you warm them right up to you, go, oh, maybe I'll just try
that. That was it. Yeah. And when they sort of trust you, I think, and they realize that, oh, okay, no, it's all right. She knows what she's doing. Touch wood as I say that. It felt safe, you know, it felt really lovely. So, it was all good. I've had a nice time.
Oh, yay. Do you know what? It made me really excited because I've seen your journey. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know you have. And actually, I was thinking this on the way here. I need to say a big thank you to you, you know, because I remember back in the very early days, I'd only done a handful of gigs, really. And I remember messaging you one day and telling you about an experience I'd had with a comedian. Do you remember this?
Yes, I do remember.
With a very, very famous, brilliant comedian who I have a lot of respect for. But we did a gig together. And like I say, it was back when I'd only done a handful of gigs. And this person told me, he was very drunk when he said it, but did say, well, there's no point in you doing it because you're too old now to start comedy. And it felt like a real gut punch. And I remember messaging you and saying, you know, I know you're not going to say, yes, you're too old, give it up. But, you know, seriously, you've seen people come and go and you know your shit. So, and you were so lovely and just sort of laid it on the line and were really practical and sensible and compassionate, but like I say, really practical about it. Almost sort of, you didn't say to me, get a grip, but you did kind of say, take no notice, you know what you're doing and just keep going basically. And if you're good enough, it will pan out. And that's what I needed. I didn't need someone to go, bless you, which is what I thought I wanted.
Yeah.
Because I think, again, we're sort of preconditioned a little bit to expect someone to sort of pat us on the head maybe and go, oh, come on now, it's all going to be okay.
But
actually just a little bit of, not tough love, but you were so, like I say, just so practical and sensitive about it. It was brilliant. So thank you for that. Aww. Otherwise, I don't know that I'd have carried on because when somebody says to you, nah, give it up, mate, what are you trying to do?
Yeah, I just don't think, I don't believe that other people should tell you when you should give up or not. Like, I think that should be an instinctual thing to yourself.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I think you have, only you can answer that. Because people in the industry could say, oh, A, B, and Z is amazing and G is not. And then, but actually G goes, poof.
Yeah,
never know what's going to happen in somebody's career. So you don't have the right to be like, you shouldn't be doing comedy.
Yeah.
But it's exactly more like that. Going.
Yeah. I think it is difficult as an older person.
Yeah.
I'm so making it sound like I'm 80 years
You're
old.
You're not like, this is the weird
heading
thing.
To the grave. But actually, you know, there is such a, I mean, some, I'm generally speaking, always the oldest person in the green room. But probably the youngest person when it comes to experience. Mm. That's starting to change a little bit now, obviously, because I've been doing it a little while.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been interesting seeing people's reactions to me as a as an older woman coming into comedy. So yeah, it's been something that's a bit, yeah, interesting to see.
Yeah. Mm. But also, I think I remember saying to you as well in my email, because I remember your email. I don't really remember what I personally said, but I do remember thinking, no, but you're at your prime. You're at the best time of your life to be talking about stuff because you've lived. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess there is that thing of, you know, been there, done that, got the T-shirt, all that sort of stuff, had the kids, been through the divorce, had the career.
Yeah.
Gave up the career, changed to something completely different. So yeah, there is that, and I guess there's a maybe there's a certain degree of confidence that comes with that, but also it's a bit of a double-edged sword, I think, because you know, let's face it, we do live in a society where it's so much sort of, you know, past it, and or you know, when you reach a certain age, past it, and whatever. And obviously, a lot of my act is about that as well. And I suppose, like, you know, with everybody, you joke about the stuff that upsets you the most, I think. And that is a big thing for me. I think I've internalized ageism really badly. So I'm like the one that, I mean, I get, oh God, perfect example is that now I get hit with dating apps that are aimed at people my age, and they're called awful things like Our Time Dating. And the picture that goes with Our Time Dating, and this is going to sound awful, right? But this is an example of my own internalized ageism. The picture that accompanied the Our Time Dating app is an elderly couple asleep together. And they look, I mean, it looks like somebody should check to see if they're all right.
Like, kind of like the Titanic. You know the old couple in the Titanic that stay together?
It is exactly like that. It's like, oh, there's been some sort of pact.
Yeah. And it's like,
I'm ridiculous. Like, really? That's where I'm at now? Is that what people think that I should be doing? Just sort of, you know, drift off together.
But you're not, though. You're on. You're going after an amazing career, which
is
exciting.
I'm trying. I'm having fun. I think that's the thing.
Yeah. You know. So what got you into comedy? Like, so you said you did like a big career shift.
Yeah.
So was comedy something, because it's quite a common theme. Sometimes there's comedy sitting in the root of you. Is it something that just came to you later? Yeah.
Tell me. I mean, I was a teacher. I was a teacher for 16 years. And I didn't go into teaching until late. That's a bit of a running theme in my life, I think, that I put everything off and don't feel confident enough to do it at the time that you should do it. So, I didn't go into teaching until I was in my mid-30s.
Okay.
But I loved it. I loved the first 10 years or so of teaching. And I think there's quite a lot of comedians that used to be teachers.
Oh my God, I was just going to say that. It's really
common. There's definitely something deep rooted within teachers that's that, you know, massive show off thing. Pay attention to me.
Yeah.
So I was a high school teacher. I taught English for 16 years. And like I said, I loved it for the first few years. And then it slowly started to change. And I think I changed and the system changed. And then I started just dipping my toe in the open mic circuit. And I did a comedy course and then didn't really do anything with it straight after that. But I did, after a year or so after doing the course, dip my toe in the open mic circuit and then started to do bits and pieces of things that even now I think, you know, wow, I can't believe I got that gig. That's really awesome, you know, really yeah. nice things. And then one day I'd done, it was only quite early days, and I'd done a gig at just one of the open spots at Hot Water.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the kids found it. One of the kids that I taught found it, which really amazes me, because if I used to set them homework of stuff like, you know, go and find 10 quotes from Macbeth, they couldn't do that. But they yeah. can find, you know, their teacher performing online comedy. So anyway, so I was at school and had to deal with that. It all went through HR and everything, wow. you know, because obviously, you know, children don't know about sex and swearing.
Yeah.
yeah, exactly. So, and the kids were actually pretty cool about it generally. Yeah. But of course, you know, you can't have teachers doing things like that. So it was fine, but it was a case of, well, we'll be monitoring it. You know, we'll be monitoring what you're doing and just making sure. It's fine for MPs to go on I'm a Celeb and things like that. But
yeah.
apparently, as a teacher, you know, you can't overstep the mark. I think we have quite a Victorian view of what teachers can and can't do still, certainly in the UK. But
Oh, no, don't get me started on the education system.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, so that was kind of, that was what started me thinking, I don't really want to be doing a job that stifles me from doing what I would really like to be doing. Not that I was like earning money from comedy or anything, but you know, life is short and you want to be having fun and doing things you want to do. So I started looking at other ways of being able to earn money and do a bit of a balancing act with comedy and day job work and stuff. And then just gave up classroom teaching altogether eventually. It was quite, it seemed quite obvious to me that that was what was going to need to happen eventually. Yeah. There was just too much, the bureaucracy and all that bullshit, you know, what it's like. But anyway, yes.
Yeah, my mum was a teacher, so I totally understand.
Oh, wow, okay. So
but
you
she's
know,
still a teacher,
you know,
but yeah.
Yeah, oh, God bless her.
I know. Well, she actually went into English as a second language.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
She went to Hong Kong
Oh, my God. Okay, so a lot of the work that I do now during the day is tutoring kids in Hong Kong.
Wow.
Yeah, there we go.
There you go.
What do you know?
Yeah.
That's obviously quite a nice route to go down.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. She was a lot happier.
Yeah.
If she taught primary.
Oh, really? Little ones.
Little ones. Yeah.
Wow. See, I think that people always say, oh, wouldn't you prefer to teach primary than high school? But I think primary school teachers, how do they do that?
Oh,
it's
all
sick and poo and wee and bogies and... I couldn't cope with that. Just no.
My mum also, she was a bit of like, you know, she wasn't like the norm teacher. Like her room was the most colourful. She proper, like people didn't really get her because she proper made it a magical space.
But that's what it should be like.
I know.
Those are the best teachers.
Yeah.
And now she doesn't do it.
No. So. Well, she did do that in Hong Kong.
Oh, she did. She came and did it in Hong Kong as well.
Yeah, because she was teaching little 5, 6, and 7-year-old girls English. Oh, it's super cute.
Yeah, that is really lovely.
But they're much more polite.
Yes. Yeah.
We're a little bit rough around the edges.
Yeah. I mean, I quite liked sort of the naughty kids. Not the nasty ones. There's a difference between naughty and nasty.
Yeah.
But I can probably count on one hand the number of kids that I would actually say were nasty.
Yeah.
But actually, the naughty kids, you know, the ones that sort of, that make you laugh when you're not supposed to laugh because you're a teacher.
Yeah.
I quite liked those kids. And, but it was sort of, And I like those because you could sort of get your, if you could get a hook into those kids and work out what was going to make them tick and what was going to get them into thinking that, oh, okay, well, maybe I'll give this Shakespeare shit a bit of a go then. That I used to love that. I used to feel like I'd sort of won some sort of little battle. But then as time went on these days in education, I'm being really boring talking about teaching education.
No. No, because I'm going to relate it to comedy.
Yeah.
I've got a question brewing.
Okay, good. The autonomy has gone a little bit out of teaching now, and you can't teach necessarily in the way that you feel, in my opinion, in the way that you feel is going to hook kids and get them individually involved and entertained and excited and interested, which I think is really, really important. But, you know, I do this instead now, so yeah. It's all good.
But it's interesting when you're saying about like the naughty ones and how you're trying to hook them. You can see now why so many comedians go from teaching to comedy, because it's kind of got that similar format, right? You've got a room full of people that you've got to get them interested in you, and then you've got the naughty ones, and you're like, right, you, I'm going to win you over.
Yeah,
you can see it.
Definitely, it is a thing, I think, but also. I do find that there are positives and negatives too. And I think that's definitely a thing of, I'm going to make you want to listen to me.
Yeah.
But also as an ex-teacher, I think there can also be the thing of, I better be careful what I say. And I don't want, and I have to remind myself sometimes, actually, it's okay now. It's all right. Yeah. You know, I can sort of, if somebody... I don't know, to be honest, touch wood as I say this, I've never had to actually tell anyone to fuck off on stage, but it's nice to know that I can say that now, whereas weirdly, I'd never have been able to say that in a classroom.
No.
But there's quite a freedom that comes from being able to sort of say what you like and know that if the audience misbehaves, it is, it's an option.
And you've got security.
Yeah.
To take them
there
out.
There is that, exactly that. Yeah.
You can be like,
right, they're not listening, chuck them out.
Chuck them out.
Whereas, in the classroom, that didn't used to happen. Yeah. But I think it's definitely, like you say, I think the reason that a lot of comedians used to be teachers is that deep-seated thing of listen to me, like me, let me entertain you, all of that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's really interesting because the more people I interview, that either they were teachers or went to drama school.
Yeah, okay.
And in drama school, they were told that they weren't serious enough.
Yeah. I was listening to Laurie Smith talk about her experiences at drama school and always feeling like she couldn't keep it serious. She had to do something silly. So there's it's that performance aspect, isn't it? You feel like, I know I want to perform, but I don't really want to necessarily follow all these strict rules and guidelines, which obviously are still there in comedy as well, but you sort of manipulate them a bit so that they work for you, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
But it was really interesting to hear her talking about that.
But also too, you're in charge of your own career.
Yeah.
To a degree, do you know what I mean? You are your own director, your own editor.
Yeah.
You are the own... sometimes your own agent,
absolutely,
manager. Yeah.
And sometimes that feels really, really shit.
Does it?
Well, no, I mean, it's brilliant. Obviously, it's fantastic because you're completely responsible for your own successes and your own failures and what you include and what you cut out. But it's also really awful because you are completely responsible. everything. So, it is absolutely brilliant, and it's that lovely sense of freedom, but there's nobody else to blame, if it goes tits up, then it's you've created that. But also if it goes brilliantly, you've done that.
Yeah. I know, but most comics will be like, that's the audience. It's the audience. And I was like,
sometimes I might think that, but we've seen rooms where you think, oh my god, what's this gonna be like? Although I don't know, when it comes to audiences, I always say this now, that I think it's so dangerous to prejudge an audience.
Yes,
because I've walked into rooms before now and thought, this is going to be... So, for example, there was a room full of students and I thought, this is just going to be a car crash because they're just going to look at me and think, why is my mum on the stage and this is embarrassing? And absolutely fantastic, just lovely, absolutely lovely crowd, brilliant. I've done other gigs where I've looked at the room and thought, room full of middle-aged women, they're going to love me because these are my people.
Yeah.
And then they see me walk on and they've done that thing of... pulling their coats across themselves, across their arms. You thought, shit, before you've even opened your mouth,
you can't judge.
You just never know what a group of people are going to be like.
100%. I'll never forget back when I was working in Aotearoa, New Zealand, at the International Comedy Festival there. Yeah. And we only had one show that hadn't sold out, and a group of guys rocked up and they were a stag and they were like, we want to see a show. And it was one comedian, Neil, and he was a gay comedian, and his whole show is about him being a bear.
Right. Okay.
And these guys, and we were like, what no, these guys cannot come in. This is a stag do. Yeah. They're the worst people. Yeah. And then they literally sat down. They were loving it. They loved every second of it. Me and Neil couldn't believe it afterwards. We're like,
see, it's
they
just,
were, and they, yeah. We at first thought this is going to be the worst hour. But actually, they loved him so much.
That's
they
amazing.
Followed him. Like in terms
that's
of like
so
went to have
nice.
The shows with them. Like,
wow.
Yeah, it was, we misjudged them completely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was
fantastic.
One of the best things I've ever seen, I think.
That's so nice.
Of misjudgment. Yeah.
Yeah, and you just can't, sometimes you can.
Yeah.
But one of the best nights that I ever had was when I first started out in comedy, my friends, Tal Davis and Hannah Weekman we all started around about the same time. And we did a three-woman show. And we did Brighton Comedy Festival.
Oh, nice.
And we'd done a shit job of promoting it. We didn't know what we were doing, basically. Mm. So we turned up at the venue where we were going to do our show. And there was nobody there. Nobody. But there was a stag do in another room in the pub. And I thought, okay, it's do or die, really. So I went into this stag do and I was like, guys, come on, there's a comedy show. Come with us. And sure enough, this whole stag do came into the room.
Yeah.
And Hannah, bless her, was like, oh my God, Jules, what are you doing? But she was prepared to go with it. I thought Tal was going to stab me in the face. Tal was like, what have you done? Oh, she was so, we've got photographs actually of Tal just sitting looking absolutely horrified. But it was the best night. Talk about baptism of fire.
Wow.
It was fantastic. I don't think any of us did any material or very, very little.
Yeah.
We just riffed it for 20 minutes each,
which, you
know, to an experienced act now is, it would be, you know, oh yeah, well, whatever. But we were babies at comedy, had no idea. And it was, it could have gone very much the other way, but it was fantastic. And these guys had a great time. We had a great time. And the buzz afterwards, because we just, you know, had a fabulous time. And we had that was a blast.
Yeah.
An absolute blast. So again, you know, that judgment of, oh my God, a stag do that's all drunk. This is going to be awful. And actually, we had the best time.
Yeah.
You can't tell.
Though, sometimes when you've been in a bad room, it's more hilarious to the comics.
Oh, God, 100%.
When it is literally the audience.
Yeah.
Like, because you should never say it's the audience's fault, but then there's sometimes when it is.
Yeah.
When it's 11 o'clock at night and they're really drunk and literally everyone was bombing and all you could hear was us in the back laughing
it's the best
because
thing.
It's so bad.
There's no sense of camaraderie like a group of comedians that are all bombing at the same time.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. It's the best feeling.
Yeah, to the point, I won't mention the comedian, to the point they said somebody else's name who was famous. They were like, I've been blah, blah. And we were just dying. We were like, this is the worst
amazing.
Hour.
Oh,
luckily,
it was
just an hour.
But moments like that are fab, aren't they?
Yeah.
Just like moments when, you know, you do feel that sense. Because actually, I think comedy can be quite lonely.
Yeah.
I find that anyway, you know, because, you know, you're driving about by yourself all over the country.
Yeah.
And then you arrive at a place where you've never been before, you don't know anyone. Very often you walk into a green room and maybe there'll be somebody in there that you know, but very often not. And
and mostly you'll be the only woman on the bill.
Usually the only woman, yeah, absolutely. And it can be a little bit, just a little bit of a lonely feeling. But when that happens, my God, friends for life. It's like you are bonded by this horrific experience. It's so cool. I love it. Shouldn't say that, but it is funny when you all die together.
Yeah. It is. It does stick. Like that story just sticks with me forever.
Yeah,
like when I remember that club I worked at, I was like, oh, that was the best night. Because we were having fun.
Exactly. Exactly. Fuck everyone else. We're having a great time.
Yeah, that is one shame thing about the UK, how the industry doesn't have that big community. Like there's a bar, everyone drinks at, and everyone rocks up to after their gigs that have been around the city.
Because
everyone, I found that when I worked in London, like comics would just be going.
They'd
Whereas we've only got one comedy club in New Zealand.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, everywhere else is like a bar. that does comedy, but one, we only have one. Well, we did when I was there. I think there might be another one now, but there was only one official comedy club.
Right.
So you were integrated all the time. Like, you know, you've had people that were on the TV with people who were up and coming, and so they could learn off these pros.
That's kind of a really nice, although I suppose it must have been more and more difficult for comedians to get spots in places. I don't know.
No, because there were heaps of gigs and heaps of people putting their own gigs on.
Oh, okay. Okay. But there was only one proper bona fide
was the home
club.
Of comedy. Oh, wow. Like, was their home. And we had an outside bar and an inside bar, like a bar inside the venue and outside. And they could just they'd all come, have
really
a drink.
Nice. Yeah.
It was really cool. So we got to know everyone really well.
Yeah.
I mean, I get to know people really well, but.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, how lovely.
Yeah, it was. And so when you're like having to travel kind of alone, like, because obviously you're now traveling all over the country, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
So do you travel with people, or are you more like, no, I just want to go on my own?
Sometimes. Like, it depends. I'll car share with people every now and again, but 9 times out of 10, I think I'm, traveling by myself.
Yeah.
And which, again, I never thought that I would do, because I hate driving. I always hated driving, you know.
Yeah.
But now all over the place all the time. It's absolutely crazy. When I look back at it, you know, sometimes I think if I could see myself, if the me from 5 years ago could see me now, that would be pretty something, I think. And I feel quite proud of that.
You should be.
That's really nice. Because, and it sounds so stupid.
Yeah.
Because it's just driving. But for me, it was such a phobia.
Yeah.
But I loved comedy so much. This sounds really like, but it's my passion. but I loved comedy so much that it was like, well, you either drive to these places or... Because I know there are loads of comedians that go all over the place by public transport.
I know.
And I don't know how they do it. But also... as a woman as well, I don't really want to be hanging around at stations at night.
No.
And I've done it, and it's just, it's not pleasant.
Yeah.
It's just not nice.
Especially during the winter.
Oh, absolutely.
Because
when
you're going to a club at 8 o'clock and you're on the train at 6 and you're like, it's midnight.
Yeah, 100%. But lots of traveling about by myself now. But that's okay. I find as long as I'm listening to something that keeps me entertained, then that's all good.
Yeah, yeah. And so you said you like comedy is your passion, your love. So what stirred the bug years ago? I know we talked about teaching before, and but was that something you grew up with, watching comedy?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I love the story that my mum always tells about the reason that she went into labour with me is because she was laughing hysterically at a man with a bald head on Opportunity Knocks. I mean, I don't know who this man was or God love him, but, you know, apparently that's why my mum went into labour, because she was out of control laughing. So I'm not saying that that had any particular, you know.
No, I think it does, you know. They say that in the womb, if you do something.
Yeah, do you reckon? So it's that laughter has always stayed with me. But I always just, I grew up loving comedy. It was interesting. I was listening to Hayley Ellis as well. She was talking about the things that she grew up loving, and very similar. So I loved The Young Ones. In fact, I find this really interesting about the way that my approach to comedy, because obviously I'm 51 now. And so when I was a teenager, the things that were on the TV, there was a real eclectic mix. So my mum and dad wouldn't let me watch The Young Ones.
Okay.
Because it was too controversial and rude, you know, and they were sweary and out there and political. So I wasn't allowed to watch The Young Ones, but we would all sit down as a family to watch the Benny Hill show. Yeah, that's not all right, is it?
Yeah.
You know, so sort of, so of course I would sneakily watch The Young Ones and knew I felt a little bit uncomfortable about the Benny Hill show, but didn't really understand why I felt uncomfortable, because I was so young and didn't quite get it. So those sort of two extremes of comedy, I think are... I don't know. I just find, I do find that really interesting. That, and also, I remember growing up when people like Jo Brand were just coming to just becoming famous.
Yeah.
And I remember watching her quite wide-eyed, you know, thinking, wow, she's talking about all this stuff that, you know, the, because again, she was around at the same time that I still remember my parents watching, I don't know, Jimmy Tarbuck and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
Again, there's two completely opposite sides of the coin. And people like my dad, he'll hate me for saying this, but my dad hated Jo Brand, absolutely hated her.
Yeah.
Because she was doing things that, you know, women weren't supposed to do and talk about things that women weren't openly supposed to talk about. And like, so I can remember watching and thinking, you're amazing.
Yeah.
That's really quite something. But not feeling allowed to kind of say, well, I really like her. Please can we turn Benny Hill off?
Yeah. And do you think that maybe like was like, oh, that's something like that I'm not allowed to do?
Yeah, there was, aspects of that there, I think, watching. And again, growing up with that thing of, oh, well, you know, women just talk about those things and women aren't funny because they talk about those things. And certainly, and I've had people of my own age, you know, say to me, oh, women comedians, the thing is with you lot, it's all tampons and periods and menopause, isn't it? Not really, no.
Yeah. You know. But also 50% of the women are in the audience.
Well, so
it's normal for us to go through that stuff.
Exactly. So
all men talk about is their penises and who they look like.
Yeah, there is a lot of that. I loved all sorts of comedians, all sorts. I adored Rick Mayall. Oh my God. I can remember when he died, just genuinely being really affected by the, I think that was probably the first celebrity death that ever really affected me.
Wow.
Because I'd grown up with him representing so much sort of silliness and brilliance. And I just thought he was this fantastic person. I fancied the pants off him as well.
Yeah.
Just, you know, he encompassed everything that I would look at and think, wow, that's amazing.
I loved him in Bottom.
Yeah, exactly.
Bottom was great.
Exactly. Everything that he did, really. I particularly loved him as Lord Flashheart in the Blackadder series.
Yeah.
I just thought, you know, I mean, just so stupid, so ridiculous, but brilliant because of that. And it was so cleverly done. I loved him a lot. But grew up, like I say, with all these sort of comedians that were for my time, you know, when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Which I'm going, this is amazing. This is not what I've been used to. This is not the sort of thing that my mum and dad and my grandparents are watching, you know.
Yeah.
So it felt quite rebellious. But then I was never a rebellious kid at all.
Really?
I was always a really good kid. Always. And still am. I'm still such a people pleaser.
Amazing.
So it's quite nice to be able to stand on stage and sometimes say things that I think, oh, that was a bit naughty. I still say things. And there is one particular joke that I do, and then I kind of I don't apologise to the audience, but I do say, well, of course, I've never really said that. I wouldn't actually say that to anyone, you know, because I can't stand the thought of people thinking that I'm not very nice and that I might actually, you know, want to do some of the things that I talk about in my act. But I love being able to say it. It's just that playing around and almost being, you know, somebody said to me the other day, well, there's a reason that we're called acts.
Yeah.
You know, you're putting on a front, you're pretending to be something that you're not. And
you're releasing something inside of you.
Absolutely.
You're
a
making
very
fun.
Exaggerated version of yourself and who you maybe are deep down. But I don't know if that's worse. The person I really am wants to do all these awful things.
Do you know what I was thinking about before when you said that women of your age who then they're like, do you know what it is? It's probably because you're about to be the mirror to their existence.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because
I know what you're thinking.
I know everything, and I'm going to make fun of it, and they're a bit like, no.
Yeah.
I'm not ready.
Yeah.
We don't talk
there
about
probably
it.
Probably are elements of that. There.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's why it's harder for women, because we're not allowed, you know, everyone's like, oh, no, you can't speak.
Oh, absolutely.
And then it's like, no, we can, though.
Yeah.
And we are funny.
Yes.
I mean, I'm funny in person. I'm not a stand-up.
You don't know until you get up there and do it.
No. No, I'm better at supporting and watching.
Well, you do that very well as well.
Thanks.
That's
fair. I'll take that. It's really good that you... Do you know what? I think it took real courage to email me to ask.
Well,
because a lot of people
courage,
wouldn't.
Courage, desperation, sadness.
Yeah, it was a bit unfair.
But yeah, I just wanted to, at the end of the day, I messaged you because you know your shit. You know what you're talking about. You do nothing but see comedians come and go all the time.
Yeah.
And I think you'd probably only seen me once. I don't know if we'd even actually properly met at that point.
No, I think we had because you were doing Beat the Frog.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you'd been doing Beat the Frog.
Yes.
And I think we had chatted.
Yeah, and then
you asked.
I just wanted somebody that knew what they were talking about to say, no, you're all right, just crack on. Seriously, take notice. It's all good.
No.
I think I'd be really interested to talk more to other female MCs because I have done a bit of MCing,
yeah,
but I don't really enjoy it.
Okay.
I don't find it comes naturally to me. And maybe this is me making excuses.
Okay.
But I think that men can get away with saying things to audiences that women can't. Mm. Now, there are amazing female
yes.
MCs.
Yeah.
Amazing. And I watch them and they do get away with it. So maybe this is me making excuses and maybe it's just that I haven't got there yet. But it interests me that I think, I don't know if I, and again, maybe this is part of my people pleasing thing,
yeah,
part of my,
maybe.
I don't want to upset people if I say something rude or naughty or offensive. But sometimes I'll hear, you know, comedians, MCs say something to people in the audience, you know what it's like,
they just rip the piss
out of them and you know, really, really quite mean things sometimes.
Yeah.
And the audience loves it and lap it up. And I think, God, if I said that, what if? And for me personally, and I apologies if I'm making excuses for just myself, and it's actually nothing to do with the fact that I'm a woman, but I do feel that people wouldn't take that shit from me because I'm a girl.
But I think it's important that we chat about it, though, because I think there are a lot of female comedians that would love to try MCing,
yeah,
but do have that fear.
Yeah.
But I also think it's also about how quick you are.
Oh, God, yeah, that's the other thing.
You've
got
to be so
quick. Oh, my God, absolutely. I will be in the shower the next day thinking, oh, I wish I'd said that.
You
and
know?
It's like, well, it's 24 hours later now.
It's like when you have that great argument.
Yeah.
No, you have an argument.
It's exactly that.
And you walk away and then you're like, I should have said that.
It's exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
So, but there are sort of courses that you see that people can do, but they're generally, and again, apologies if I've just not seen these, but they're generally run by guys, which is brilliant. And I've thought about doing those, but it would be really interesting to, maybe it wouldn't be any different. I don't know, but it would just be interesting to talk to women who MC and say, okay, well, you know, how do you deal with that situation? And is it actually any different? Or is this me being just sort of being paranoid about stuff? I don't know. But I don't think that men would ever have that same thought process.
Mm-mm-mm-mm.
The fact that I'm even thinking it is quite interesting.
Well, I don't think men have to be people pleasers as much as we do, and I'm sorry for generalizing, but it is true, like, we have to be these people pleasers. We have to do everything and be nice. Like, you can't be stern, you can't like, because of my accent, and when I'm really busy, I'm really quite, like, to the point.
Yes, okay.
And people will be like, oh, why are you being such a bitch? You're such a bitch.
Oh, okay.
And it's like, no, I'm giving you instructions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how I would talk. Right, you're here.
Okay.
That's just me going, this is the clearest way I can speak to you.
Yeah.
And people will be like, oh. But if a man did the same thing, you were sitting here, they'll be like, they wouldn't even think twice about it.
Yeah.
So I just think there's this element that we have to be people pleasers. But then the female MCs, they have been able to overcome that and just go,
this is the thing, you know. I think, well, hang on, if you can do it, that's proof. That's proof that actually it's not sort of an insurmountable problem.
Mm.
But yeah, it is. It does interest me, and I would really like to do it. I would, you know, I spent all those years in a classroom emceeing kids, and that's surely that's worse, you know. But it's
energy.
You've
got to have so much energy, because you're jumping onto the most coldest room.
Oh, absolutely, that's it. Yeah, but I would really, really like to talk to other women who MC rooms, and just I want to see more of them. That's the thing. I want to see more women.
Well, this is the downfall, isn't it? Because if you have a woman MC, you very rarely have.
Yeah, exactly. It's a catch 22 thing, isn't it?
And that's like, just to for a disclaimer, yes, a lot of clubs don't book enough women, but at the same time, there's not enough women, or they get
absolutely.
So booked
that's
up
it.
So
yeah.
quickly
yeah, yeah, yeah.
that it's hard to get them on.
Yeah, exactly that. So.
So there's two sides of the coin, sadly.
Absolutely.
But yeah.
Yeah.
There's more. But yeah. Yeah, it would like, yeah, I wouldn't know how you'd see more of them unless you like just went and watched comedy on your nights off.
Yeah, exactly.
Or, you know, are you joined to Owl Network?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, because Daisy Earle and Alex Stringer and Tegan Marlowe run Owl Network. And
I've
it's a supportive page
okay.
that only comedians are allowed to be on.
Right.
I've talked about this before.
Yeah.
And it's really good for female comics to join because then you can ask those questions.
Yeah.
And people will be able to point you in the right direction or you could have like a, you know, go
See,
for a
Daisy
coffee.
Daisy is an amazing MC, isn't she?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Daisy, yeah. Haley, Lou Conran.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Gareth Nelms.
Yes, yeah. But I've seen Karis do it.
Yeah, yeah. Just Kate Barron is another one. There's quite a whole lot in London.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they're all out there.
They're all
doing
out there.
It.
Yeah.
But like you say, probably just so quickly snapped up, I imagine.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And also too, it's more probably best way to try it is open mic nights.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It's just getting on and be like, yo, if you need a female MC, can I just try?
Yeah, just doing it.
Just doing it.
Exactly.
And then seeing if you like it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's got to be that like quick...
Yeah, that's it. Just practicing
energy.
Those comebacs.
Yeah. Yeah, practicing the getting that mind, that Rolodex.
The feel, the fear, and do it anyway.
100%. But it might come anyway, like once you've been, you know, working
the
circuit.
Oh, it does. I mean, it already is.
Yeah.
It already, just, you know, just then I had a little moment where I said the term blowjob at one point and a random man started clapping. It's like, and there was a time where I wouldn't have known what to do with that. I would have just ignored it.
Yeah.
You know, whereas I got another laugh out of it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, okay, again, only a year or so ago, I wouldn't have known how to deal with that. Like I said, I would have just ignored it. But that feels good now to be able to actually just come back with something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is interesting watching comics who finally can go, I know the script.
Yes.
I don't need to hold on to it so tightly.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't because you do see them when they're first starting out and that someone heckles them. They're like, uh-huh. And then they keep going. It's like, you've just missed a beautiful opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You don't know what gold or not. I mean, sometimes they don't give you anything, but.
Yeah, exactly that. And it is that thing, like I say, you know, the next day you think of that comeback.
Yeah.
But now, as an act, I'm finding that I'm able to do it. But when you're emceeing, it's that, but times 100, it's because it's intense.
Yeah.
You're just doing that off the cuff
for 10 minutes,
come off. And it must, I don't know, it must be bloody exhausting.
I think so. I think so. Yeah. Because especially if the room give you nothing.
Yes,
I've seen people
oh,
go, nothing at all. And they're just frightened.
Yeah.
And you're like, well.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But the there's a happy medium though, isn't there?
Yeah.
You know, of wanting that crowd that will sort of join in, talk to you, but also shut the fuck up when you need them to.
Yeah, yeah. Oof, when it's a drunken crowd.
Absolutely. Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Have you got another gig tonight or is this the one?
No, this is it now.
Oh,
this
nice.
Is it for today. So that's it. It's nice. I can just drive home, open a bottle of wine.
Nice.
Sit down with the dog.
Oh.
Yeah. So that'll be good.
That'll be good. And how's your, because you've got kids, haven't you?
I've got three grown-up kids. Yeah.
And have they seen you perform?
They have. Yes. My youngest, she's only 18 now, and she did only very recently. She came to see me do Rough Works at the Glee.
Yeah.
And she hasn't said very much about it. But that's just her personality.
Yeah, yeah.
The other two, so my eldest, Sam, he's awesome and he is hugely supportive.
Oh,
and
cute.
Funny, he said the other day, he said, Mom, it's great when I tell people that you're a stand-up. I'm like, oh. Thanks, Sam. So that's really cute. My middle one, Ellie, she's fab, and she's been along to quite a lot of my gigs and brought friends and all sorts of things. So it is lovely. And sometimes they'll say things to me like, "Mom, you know when you talk about that, it's not true, is it?"
No,
it's all made up.
Yeah.
Not a word of truth in any of it. Once your mum was a young woman.
Yeah. I was a saint.
Yeah. I won't let them listen to this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, don't. We've spoken a lot of truths.
But no, it's brilliant. And they are like, they're my mates, you know.
Oh, cool.
I didn't really enjoy it. This sounds horrible, but when they were little, I didn't feel like I was a very good mum. And I had really bad postnatal depression and all sorts of horrible things. And as they've got older, we've just become so close. We're such a tight knit little group because it's just me and them. And they are my mates, and I don't know what I'd do without them. They are just they're just fab and hugely supportive and just, brilliant people. You know, and I know I'm going to say that because they're my kids, but they are ace humans. They are really cool humans.
Yeah. But a lot of women go through that with young kids.
Yeah.
They struggle a lot. Like, it's not talked about. It's like, you're supposed to, again, that people pleasing. You're supposed to be
absolutely.
I'm a mum and I love being a mum.
Oh, that's
but
it. Yeah.
Like, actually, it's really hard.
It is really, really hard. And I didn't enjoy the whole, you go to these coffee mornings and, I'm talking about years and years ago.
You're like motherland.
Oh, God, yes. So much like that. But, I mean, things have changed now.
Yeah.
I mean, things like, I know there's several mum and baby comedy things that you can go to on that. And it's just the same, same as an adult comedy club. You just happen to have a baby with you.
Yeah.
And I've done a couple of those gigs and love them. I absolutely love those because I look at those gigs and just think, God, I wish this had existed when I was in my late 20s. Oh, life would have been so different because you're keeping your own identity, you know, going and watching somebody be silly. Well, just like I say, a normal comedy club, you just happen now to have a baby. It doesn't mean that you've changed as a person.
Yeah.
And that is a real shock to the system when people suddenly expect you to become this other person that, just cares about being a mum. And good on people that do want to do that, that they feel completely fulfilled, and that's fantastic. And I wish I had, but I didn't. I remember just that feeling of guilt and wanting something more. So I love those kinds of gigs. You just to see these women and dads as well, but it is generally women that turn up with their babies. They've usually got a baby in one arm, glass of wine in the other, and I think that's fucking brilliant.
Yeah. Those gigs are amazing.
Yeah, I
remember
that.
Having them at Angel Comedy when I worked there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it'd be in the afternoon, lights on, baby gig.
That's it. It's fantastic. It's just so much fun.
Changing the nappy on the ground.
Yeah, that's it. Let's just make it, you're still a woman. You're still you.
Yeah.
You're still just a person.
Yeah.
You happen to have this other little person with you now, but you're still going to laugh at the same things. You're still going to, and it's great, obviously, because the kids don't know.
No.
A little baby, they couldn't give a shit what you're talking about.
No, I mean, as kids, when we watched The Simpsons, we had no idea about the innuendos. And now when you watch it, you're like, I can't believe I was allowed to watch this.
Well, and like I just said, I was watching Benny Hill when I was a kid. So
I mean my dad made me listen to Monty Python records.
I think that's good though. I think that's a really good grounding. I wouldn't knock that
Ed
for one second.
All the comedy Father Ted.
All that stuff.
Grew up with all of that. The UK comedy.
That's fabulous. Wouldn't knock that for one second. I do draw the line at Benny Hill.
I don't know Benny Hill.
Do you not know Benny Hill? When I'm talking about Benny Hill, do you not know what that is?
No, I know who the guy is, but I don't know. I don't remember the show.
TV program was like,
I don't think we had it. And if we did, I don't know if we had it.
Okay, so it's I'm going to say, I know I'm sounding like a real old fart, and looking back at it now, I don't really have that much of a problem with it. I mean, God, my show is called Avoid Excessive Cleavage and Other Advice to Ignore.
Yeah.
And on the poster of my show is me in a bikini, with my cleavage literally out because I'm basically sticking two fingers up at all this thing of when women reach a certain age, they shouldn't wear this.
Yeah.
But the whole Benny Hill thing was sort of British seaside postcard humour. Mm. So, but it was women being chased around in their underwear by, I mean, it was silly music and it wasn't threatening at all. It was nothing, you know, it wasn't in that way awful. But bottom line is, it was women being chased around in their underwear by men.
Yeah.
And, you know, just sort of you'd think, like I say, when I was a kid, I'd think, oh, that's, you know.
But that was the norm. Like if you watch Police Academy, if you watch all those comedies of that time, like Lethal Weapon, all those films, like, it's all that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It was all of that. Yeah. So it wasn't just them. It was like nearly, what was the other one with the Barbara? She was in EastEnders.
Oh, all the Carry On films. Again, you know, I'm actually really fond of Carry On films. Yeah. I love Carry On films. But at the same time, you can look at them and go, but that's what I was saying earlier about, you know, I think it's actually really healthy to be able to look at that stuff and go, okay, I can see why that's entertaining. And it makes 100%. Me laugh as well. I love a lot of that. British postcard humour is fab. You know, it's sort of it's what this country's built on.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's important to kind of recognise that maybe we've moved on a little bit.
Yeah, have those conversations of why we've moved on. I think that's what's important about the future is going, right, this had a time and place where it was, it doesn't suit now, but why doesn't it suit now? Instead of, I think those conversations are more important for younger people anyway.
Absolutely.
To chat to them about it.
I mean, it's really interesting that my youngest, she's 18, and she obviously OnlyFans is a huge thing now, and it's brilliant that women can sort of just, and guys, but people that I know of, you know, women can take responsibility for their own bodies and do what they want with that. And my youngest daughter has said to me, "Mom, you should do an OnlyFans, you know." I was like, "Luce, one, I'm not comfortable having this conversation with my daughter, and two, I'm 51." She said, "No, Mom, just, apart from anything else, if people find you attractive at your age, that's a niche." So, okay, well, thanks for that. That's great. But also, Mom, it's feminism. Now, that's fantastic, right? The fact that my 18-year-old daughter thinks that way, because, like, I'm like, oh my God, society has changed so much. Because I can remember when I was her age being livid about things like Page 3, and because the tables have turned so much.
Yeah.
You know, like I say, I've now got on my social media stuff of, like I say, me in a bikini with my boobs nearly out going, come and see my show. But it's not me going, come and see the tits. It's me going, I'll fucking do what I want to do. Thank you very much. Don't you tell me what's right or what's wrong. Although, when I did my show as part of Leicester Comedy Festival, I did have a couple of old perverts in the audience. But you know what? They put 20 quid each in, and I thought, I'm happy with that.
It's so true. You're set. When you talk about the audience, you're going to do it. You kind of did.
Well, their money's as good as anybody else's.
Yeah? Yeah? That's so funny. Oh, God.
I don't know if that's all right to leave in or not. It is. That's all right. That's
It's right. Up to you. If you go away from tomorrow, it's 24 hours, and you're in the shower, and you're like, you know what? I don't want that in the podcast. We'll take it out.
I think that's okay.
I think that's hilarious.
To say that, because there's a mix of everything going on there.
Yeah, there is. I mean, hopefully they enjoyed the comedy. They probably learned a little thing.
I think so.
They probably learned a little bit of information.
Yeah, I hope so.
Hopefully you changed their minds. We can end it on that. Hopefully you changed their minds.
A positive influence on perverts' lives.
Yes. They got a great education and some laughs.
And a crafty wank at the back of the room.
Yes. Oh, God.
Sorry. Oh, dear.
No comedy.
They gave me money.
They did give you money. So your daughter was right.
Yes, it's feminism.
Oh.
So anyway, are you going to do the
Leicester Festival.
I am doing it. Yay! Yeah, I'm doing Leicester Festival. I'm doing it with Just the Tonic, which I'm really, really nice. Grateful for. And so I can't believe that either. That's so lovely.
And
so,
what date are you doing it? Oh, let's plug.
Glad you just asked me that. And I'll let me just have a look. I am doing my show on, you see, I should know this off the top of my head.
I know you should. This
That's
is bad.
So unprofessional.
Do you want me to do it again or we're right?
Let's do it again.
Okay, hold Jacob, on. We'll just hold cut on. That little yeah. bit out and I'll ask it again when you're ready.
There it is. Okay, I've got it.
Okay, so are you doing Leicester Festival this year?
I am, and I'm doing it with Just the Tonic, which nice. I can't believe. I feel so lucky to have them on board. That's really, really brilliant. I can't believe that's happened, actually. And it's on Friday the 23rd of February at the Exchange Bar in Leicester.
Nice.
So, yeah. And and it's I've done it several times now, and it's sort of slowly morphing into the show that I want it to really
cool.
be.
Cool.
So, yeah.
And
so,
it's just you, just
it's
an hour.
It's just me for an hour.
Nice.
Yeah. And it is really good fun. And I'm enjoying it a lot. Still incredibly nervous because, you know, an hour is, you know, and I'm still relatively new to it. But it's a lot of fun. And, it's just really nice to be doing it, with JTT and stuff. It's fab. So, yeah. Very exciting stuff.
Really excited for you. It's just been amazing just to see, like I said at the beginning, it's been really amazing to see you grow, see you come and do like 20 minutes at the Frog and now doing your full hour. I think that's really special. And I'm glad you didn't listen to
Thank
that.
Thank you. Absolutely. And I listened to you instead. And
that's
that's been well worth it. No, it's true. Thank you.
I know I keep bringing it back, but I'm not doing this for my ego. I'm just literally trying to give you
a
compliment.
You should. It's 100% true. You should run some sort of course.
No.
Ignore dickheads.
Yeah, ignore the dickheads.
He's not actually a dickhead.
No, he's just, not. Just gave bad advice.
Yes, that's it. He just gave bad advice.
Yeah, to you. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. But
well, thank you so much for coming to do this with me.
Thank
it's been
you.
Such a joy just
it's
to chat
been
with you.
Brilliant. It's been so much fun.
I know. I feel like I've known you for years.
It's nice, isn't it?
It is nice.
It's good.
Yeah.
I've had
this
a
is
lot
what happens
of fun.
When women support women.
Absolutely.
That's what we should end
That's
on.
That's what it's all about. Yeah. 100% that.